Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
You are listening to Inside F1 with Joe Sayward on Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Inside F1 with Joe Sayward on Missed Apex Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Spanners-Reddy. This is part of the Missed Apex Motorsport Podcast Network. We're an independent podcast still, here produced in the shed with the kind permission of our better halves. We aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute, even when there isn't a race. Because we might be wrong, but we're first. This show, Inside F1, is about speaking to one of the very most experienced and well-known F1 journalists in the paddock. Let's speak to a presumably very soggy Joe Sayward. How's it going, Joe? How's it going, Joe? I forgot to unmute you. How's it going, Joe?
I'm fine. I didn't get too soggy because there wasn't a lot of point in going outside. I did get a bit soggy towards the end of the day, just rushing around talking to people. But I'm fine. I'm not any smaller. I haven't shrunk. it was a fairly miserable weekend, as I guess you can probably have guessed.
Yeah, I was going to say, how did you amuse yourself? Like, I didn't see you going out and starting a Mexican wave with the crowd. You sent Daniel Ricciardo to do that for you.
I was actually working all day long because I produce magazines and I needed to catch up with things. So I had work going all day long until the race. Well, I was going to say the race started until the cars left the pit lane and there was a thing called a live race going on. I didn't pay much attention, to be honest.
So I wasn't intending a plug, but your GP magazine that you do, your PDF magazine, the good thing about it is it doesn't actually fully rely on the race. You have a lot of like non-race content in there when you put out the editions.
Yeah, we had a bit of a shorter magazine because obviously the race report didn't run to the same length as everything else. But otherwise, it was as long as always, about 85 pages. So, and we did that. That was out about 6 hours. Actually, no, in this case, it was even quicker than that because I guess it was out about 4.5 hours after the race. I didn't actually count. But there we are. It was just unfortunate.
Yeah.
To be honest, I know that lots of people have got opinions about what was right and wrong, but the most important thing to bear in mind is that they followed the rules in as best they could to try and put on a race. In the end, they couldn't, but they did the best they could. And, you know, sending you can't guess at lunchtime and say it's going to rain all day. We'll send everybody home because there would have been a riot. The Dutch fans wanted to see Max winning. You can't just start a race and then hope that nobody's going to crash and hurt somebody. And it's not just the drivers I'm talking about. It's about spectators and everybody. So I think they did what they could. And in the end, that was all they could do. Now, the argument about whether there should be points is if you start the race and the race is live, which it was from the moment they left the pits at 18:17, I believe it was, that was a race. Now, they didn't actually have any racing laps, but it was still a race. And that way, because it was a race, they had to award points, even if it was only half points. So it was ridiculous that they awarded points for qualifying, but they couldn't do anything else.
So the accusation, and I'm certainly not fueling this myself, the accusation was that there was a lot of boxes to tick, and that's why they classified it as a race. The boxes to tick will be saying that you've done a TV event. And more cynically, which I'm not buying into, that also means that the paying spectators have seen an event and therefore got their money's worth.
No, they saw an event that was ruined by the weather. It wasn't the fault of Formula One. When the cars went out, the rain had lessened. At that particular moment, when they fired them up and left the pits, the rain was less than it was before. But by the time they got round at the end of those two or three laps, it had gone back to what it had been before. and it was just not possible to do anything. So, yes, you can be cynical. Yes, you can say they should have their money back and all the rest of this stuff. But I don't mind if the fans want to have their money back. Lewis Hamilton can give up 2.5% of his income, because that's basically the share of 1/22nd of his money. That's fine by me. Everyone can give up to whatever the percentage is, and the fans can have their money back. The only problem with that is still a problem, because Spa spent a whole bunch of money getting ready for the event, and no one was going to pay that back. We don't want to put Spa out of business.
Yeah.
We want there to be a Spa in the future, and suggesting that people get their money back would bankrupt Spa. So let's just be sensible. It's a mess. It was unfortunate. It wasn't perfect. But that's the risk you take as a spectator. It's happened once in 71 years in Formula One history, and it probably won't happen for another 71 years. Although the rules of the game have changed slightly, in as much as the cars are much more sensitive to wet weather. Spa is a very, very dangerous place in the wet, as was proven in the course of the weekend. If you want any other evidence, go on Google and type Spa Grand Prix 1998 and watch the tires flying in front of the grandstands. It couldn't be started. There have been races where there've been more rain. I don't doubt it, but it wasn't at Spa. And you know, that is the bottom line of it all. And that's the risk you take.
Yes. And if you're disappointed about your outdoor event being rained off, cricket fans would like to say hello to you. Obviously, we're used to it. I've only ever paid to go to one test match, and it was rained off for 5 days at Headingley. And actually, it was a brilliant few days we had down there, to be fair. And it did look like the Dutch fans were making the best of it. But any outdoor event is subject to the weather. It seemed extreme. And it seemed like the spray was the real limiting factor. But we can get into a few different factors. I've got a question here, though, from Rob Asher, which is a great way to kick off. Thank you, Rob. Joe, if you'd have been the race director on Sunday, is there anything at all you would have done differently?
I would say that the communication of some of the decisions was not perfect, but that's not the fault of the race director. That's the fault of for example, the decision to suspend the clock, which is not changing a rule. It's trying to keep the race possibilities alive longer, to try to make a race happen. So what they did was they suspended the 2-hour limit, just saying the clock can tick, but we're not going to count it until a certain point, which you say, well, we have to count it now because it's going to get dark otherwise. And so that was a sensible thing to do, but that wasn't well communicated. And everyone was confused. You could hear the teams asking about it. You could hear us all going, well, you couldn't hear us, but we were all going, what does this mean? But, you know, with that exception, I don't think they did anything wrong. I think really they were very creative and very respectful of the fans as much as they could be.
So when they were interviewing people, I was watching the Sky feed, whenever they were interviewing people, and when you heard the FIA to team comms, no one seemed to know that the clock had started. And it also seemed like very few people knew that once that clock had started, there was no possibility, because they were asking people about Monday and people seemed to think that was an option. So clearly the communications and the team principals just didn't seem to know what was happening and what the rules were.
Well,
the
team principals not knowing the rules is not unusual.
Right.
Sporting directors are the ones who know the rules, and team principals generally turn to the sporting director and say what happens in this case. Otherwise, they wouldn't have time to run the teams that they're running because they'd have to learn all the rules. I think the fundamental problem of all of this is that the circumstances that were presented to Formula One have never happened in the same way before at Spa. And you keep having to add at Spa, because Spa is a special case because of Eau Rouge, fundamentally, and Blanchiment, and the grandstand being right next to the racetrack, and this and that. But it's different to other racetracks. That's why you have to deal with it separately. But we've never had anything like it. Therefore, the rules don't cover it. So, there are not rules. It's like the question of, was there a fastest lap of this race? There's a point at stake there. The fastest lap of the race in a one-lap race, which is what it was ultimately, it was classified as a one-lap race, although there were three laps behind the safety car, because you reset back if there's a red flag. Okay? So Mazepin set a lap outside the top 10, admittedly, so he wouldn't qualify anyway, but he set the fastest lap on, I think, the second lap around. On the first lap around, the only person who could have set the fastest lap, apart from the safety car, it was Max Verstappen, because he went round faster than anybody else because he was ahead. So does Max Verstappen get 1 point for fastest lap?
Or half?
Answer is no, no, no. Well, there was nobody set the fastest lap officially. Now, why that was, I don't know. But then again, we've never had this situation before. So you're kind of making it up as you go along.
There was a feeling of making it up as you go along, but I don't think that's going to change. Those points are awarded. To some extent, it's done and dusted. But I just want to make the point, Joe, that yeah. I think the media and the Twitter sphere would be a much more hostile place if it was Lewis Hamilton on pole and Lewis Hamilton had got those free points and another 5 point lead over Max. I would have just switched Twitter off for the day.
Up to a point, yeah. I think one of the reasons he said he liked fans to get their money back was to make orange people happy. You know, I don't know what his thinking was, but I just thought it was a silly thing to say. And it just naturally, there's always going to be people who will go onto Twitter and into magazines too, who will sensationalize everything. But, you know, it wasn't the fault of the FIA. They didn't do a bad job. And fundamentally, everything you read saying this was a disaster, this was a catastrophe, this was that, is just not true. It's just unfortunate circumstances.
Okay. And one of the things we didn't get to cover on our non-race review on Sunday night was actually the pre-rain concerns about the current setup in Eau Rouge up to Radion down the Camel Strait. And mm-hmm. David Sayer here just has a question here. Are there any plans to look at Eau Rouge with yet more incidents? Is the runoff area a concern that needs to be looked at? I believe there is something for next year, but we were already nervous, weren't we? You know, with 2019, with the W Series crash, with Norris, and that was even before all of this stuff on Sunday.
I think everyone was worried from 19 onwards, to be honest. But the key point about it is that there is a plan that has been in place now for probably a year and a half to change the circuit. Now, that's not all just about Formula One. It's because the Spa circuit wants to have motorbike races. And in order to get motorbike races, they have to make changes, which include gravel traps and more runoff areas and moving barriers back and new grandstands and all kinds of things. That's all been programmed to happen. It's also, they started work on it and had to stop some months ago, because there was a question of whether there had to be a construction tender. And there wasn't a tender, but because Spa is deemed to be a public enterprise, they had to cancel everything and have a tender. Now, that's all now happened. And work will begin in October with the destruction, or the demolition rather, of the chalet, which blocks some of the view when you're in Eau Rouge looking ahead. That blocks some of the view of Radion. And therefore, that will help. There'll be a lot of regrading work. There will be new runoff areas at Blanchiment and at Radion. And basically, there's a lot of stuff going to be done. Now, the only other question is whether or not the money is there to do it, because it was all organized. And then it got delayed, and the bank that was loaning some money is causing some troubles. And of course, the person who was driving the whole project was unfortunately murdered about a month ago, the CEO of the Spa circuit. And so we need to find another CEO who's going to push ahead with it. It's all sort of planned to go, but there are lots of problems still to be solved.
Yeah. Okay. And so hopefully we'll be a bit less twitchy. It's just that you're hard pushed to think of such a high speed area in F1 where it's the cars driving back from a crash, going back into the racing line and back into the firing line, isn't it? And even with W Series, although they didn't bounce back onto the track, those cars were right in the firing line, and the sympathy spins just made this wall of W Series cars. And that was a real wincer to look at. That one.
Yeah, that was pretty unpleasant to watch. But there was a shunt in the Porsches. There was a shunt in Formula 3, all of them in the same place. And all of them, luckily, not all of them had the same outcome. But the other thing about Spa, which is, again, remarkable, is the fact that the spray hangs between the trees.
Right.
And there's nothing you can do about that. I mean, even if you change all the tarmac, and obviously tarmac is very important in the production of spray as well. If you have a different tarmac, you have different sprays. Anyone knows who drives around motorways, you change tarmac, you change sprays. So, and it also to do, I mean, the dynamics of tarmac may not be the most exciting subject in the world, but new tarmac drains better than old tarmac, because old tarmac, the holes get filled with dust. So, you know, there's all kinds of elements that have to be taken into account. Yeah. And basically, they're trying to keep Spa alive. We want to keep Spa. I mean, who doesn't? It's a fantastic circuit. It's my, you know, everyone. I was writing a piece this morning, and it says one of the celestial cities of Formula One. You know, it's like going to heaven, yeah, going to Spa, because there's nothing like it anymore. There's Monza coming up. It's the same kind of thing. These are pieces of heritage that we have to try and keep. And
oh, yeah.
It's really hard to do that.
And it's one of the few of those old school tracks that hasn't outgrown F1. So Silverstone, Monza, Spa. But then you look at like Monaco, Hungaroring, struggle a bit more with the cars. So when we turn up to Spa, Silverstone, Hungaroring, those are real big red letter days, possibly Interlagos as well, for F1. And it would be a shame to lose one of those jewels.
It would be. I mean, having said that, also, I mean, if you look at Monza, the races we have there, they tend to be high-speed trains these days because of the way the cars are. And Spa, there wasn't a huge amount of overtaking.
Well, not this week.
The Formula 3 races, there was almost no overtaking. And that's why, I mean, this is this daft thing about reverse grids. People are winning races for the wrong reasons, because nobody can overtake them. Doesn't mean they're the best driver. You know, this kind of thing is just hopeless. And but there is a problem at the moment on a lot of tracks with overtaking, as we know. So that's why the cars are being changed. And, you know, hopefully we want to keep Spa alive. We don't want to just go off and be going to these new built places all the time. We want to have some of the classic tracks as well.
Okay. No one tell Matt Trumpets we were talking about tarmac dynamics. He will want to do an hour-long special on it. And my idea is just little flappy bits on the back of the rear wheels. That'll stop the spray. I've solved it. There we go. That's free. That is F1.
That's a sports car.
No, just a little flappy bit. Just little rubber mats over the back of the back wheels.
That's a sports car.
It'll work.
Now they've got halos. They'll be wanting windscreens next. Then we'll have Le Mans cars. You know, so Formula One is all about being an open wheeler championship. And an open wheeler with flaps on the back is a sports car.
Just little flaps. Anyway. Can we answer some questions from our Slackers, from our Slack
group? We can indeed, yes.
Let's do that. Okay, this is a natural point to move on to just the rest of the schedule and what we're doing now, because F1 is just messing with my plans at the moment. I feel personally attacked. Richard says, does Joe think there's any chance that Spa might be rescheduled later in the year, but, I don't know, with snow tyres, to fill a gap in the schedule? Isn't there a precedence in 1985 when the track surface broke up and the race was cancelled?
There is a precedent, but there's a difference, and that is that there were, I can't remember how many races that year, but it was 16 probably, and there were more gaps. There are no gaps in the calendar today. There are no gaps. We are doing, actually, we were going to be doing 12 races in 15 weekends, and then it's Christmas, but now we're only doing 11, so we've got a bargain weekend off. But they can't do it. We're going to kill people from exhaustion if we try to move Formula One around the world and have another race rescheduled. Forget it.
Joe.
I want to go home.
Joe, that's because you're in France. In the UK, we're not going to have any stuff for Christmas anyway, so it doesn't matter if we're working. It's all right.
Well, what can I say? You make the choice. It's not my fault.
Yeah. And also, it does get a bit chilly, I'm assuming, in Belgium come December.
There's a ski resort just round the corner from Spa, okay?
Yep.
Do you need any more evidence? I went past this rather nice ski lift and thought, blimey, yeah. And I've not been to Spa in December, I must admit. But if you've ever watched the Battle of the Bulge film, you'll see that the snow was a good 3 feet deep.
Yeah. All right. Look, we've got some silly season questions as well. But let's just talk about the rest of the calendar. We know it's Zandvoort. We know it's Monza coming up. Firstly, before we go on to how the rest of the calendar might look, Zandvoort, this is exciting. We've been waiting for this for X years now, for ages. I am both excited and concerned that it's going to be a bit Hungaroring-ish, but it looks like we're also going to get some rain, hopefully not too much. How are you feeling?
God, not any more rain, please.
Well, it's forecast. It's forecast rain.
I don't know what's going to happen. I think the biggest problem they have at Zandvoort is not overtaking, it's getting everybody in and out, because it makes access for like Silverstone in the old days, or like Spa last weekend, which was a complete mess as well. So the biggest thing is to get all these mad Dutch fans in and out every day. Then as to what happens on the racetrack, there are some theories about bank turns creating different exit speeds, and we'll have to see if those work. Honestly, it's hard to know. But the people with calculators and slide rules and brains seem to think it might. So we'll see. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. But then again, you know, it will be great qualifying if if it turns out you can't overtake, it'll be Monaco again, won't it? So
yeah, and it's gonna be just a flood of orange, isn't it? Are you gonna wrap yourself in an orange flag and like tear the Union Jacks off your luggage?
Well, I don't have any Union Jacks on my luggage, as you know. I have European flags, but I think I do know that because in my hotel was a very hardened race fan who I talked to on each morning as we went along. And he's actually somehow got hold of tickets for Zandvoort. And so there will be at least one bridge in the grandstand. There are a lot of people who can't go because of COVID constraints, et cetera, et cetera. But those of us based on the continent can actually do things without too much trouble. He's also based on the continent, but he is a Brit. So I expect there'll be one Union Jack there flying somewhere. But yes, it's basically going to be... an orangey boom kind of weekend, you know.
Well, you can't begrudge that. I feel happy because they've had to wait and they've been looking forward to this for a long time. And Max Verstappen is such a feature now that having a Dutch Grand Prix is going to be good for the sport, isn't it? It's going to be like a real proper home race cauldron. And, you know, that's we love that. We love that at Monza, don't we? We love that at Silverstone. I'm probably going to get that here.
It's going to be great. And the other thing to say also is that the demand for tickets in Zandvoort was such that they had to have ballots for people to get them. And, I mean, there were a million people wanted tickets for the weekend. So I'm told, may even be more than that, which is why you're seeing so many Dutch going elsewhere, because they couldn't get into their home Grand Prix. So they'll drive to Belgium. They'll drive to Austria. They were driving to Hungary, you know. Anywhere they could get in during the COVID, everywhere was Dutch. So, they're mad fans. And why not? You know, the ultimate irony, of course, is that Nick de Vries recently became the first Dutch world champion of an FIA in the hopeless Formula E.
Joe, we've talked about this, Joe.
I'm just winding everybody up for fun, don't worry. But, you know, it's not quite the same as winning the world championship. But, you know, the irony is there. Nick is a world champion.
All right. The rest of the schedule, looking forward. I mean, the FIA website is still showing Japan there. I'm assuming that is definitely, definitely cancelled. And we've got an exciting new track called TBC. Any surprises?
TBC is translated as Qatar.
Oh, okay.
100% Qatar. I'll put money on it, and I don't bet on motor racing, okay?
Well, so. Is that track built?
Yes, it's a MotoGP track, and it's been run for years and years and years. It's called Losail International. They probably pronounce it differently, but I don't know how they pronounce it.
What's it like?
I have no idea. Never been there. It's a bike track, but it's a circuit that is homologated for Formula One, and therefore we can go there. It also has lights, so I don't know if we're going to have a night race or a day race. But just watch out for it, because we'll be going there a lot in the future, because there's at least a 10-year contract in place after this.
Okay, so slightly nervous about the end of the season. I've bet that it will be decided by Brazil anyway, the title. But obviously, I love Kota. I think that's a wonderful track. Obviously, Turkey, Kota, I guess a gap for Japan. Mexico can be hit and miss with that stadium section. Interlagos, I love. And then I think we've potentially got three dead rubbers there at the end. What do you think of those tracks? Because, I mean, Saudi Arabia is an unknown to me as well.
I've no idea. They're still building it as we speak. I got some photographs the other day of tarmac being laid.
Is that where I got in my head about, is it finished? So the Saudi track isn't finished?
No, not yet.
They're cutting it fine, Joe.
Yes, they are cutting it fine, but they have 100 days to go.
Okay, and you're confident.
And it will be a little bit hit and miss. But if, you know, those of us with long memories will remember the first trip to Barcelona, where everything was, I mean, talk about being finished. It was another mud bath, and everything was sort of being slapped together at the last minute. It's often the case. That was true in Korea as well. So it's going to be a rush.
Oh, I missed that track. I like that track, that Korean track.
Yeah, so did I, but it was in the middle of a bog, 150 miles from anywhere. So, you know... it was horrid, really, in that respect. Yeah. And it rained all the time, too, which was ghastly. Hopefully one day we'll go back to places like that and we'll get some sensible deals done. But thus far, Asia has proved a bit of a problem.
Yeah, so while we're at it, a bit of a tangent. But yeah, look, India, that was a good racetrack. So Korea's a good racetrack. Malaysia is a good racetrack. So we're missing these and we've got...
Yes, but you can't just rely on a good racetrack, because you've got to have money to pay for it. And you have to have governments that are sensible and don't do daft things, like in the case of India, trying to charge taxation on the Formula One teams for 1/20th of their revenues.
Right.
You know, this is what killed it. Some stupid politician somewhere thought that, or a bureaucrat perhaps, thought that they might make some money out of Formula One, pure cash-wise, and tried to charge them more money for going there. Whereupon they were, how should we say, a combination of one and two fingers was raised right at the Indians, and they were told to go fly their kites somewhere else, and that's what happened. So we're never going back there unless they get that sorted out. Should we be there? Of course we should. It's the second biggest country in the world. Of course we should be there.
Oh, China. Yeah, we haven't had China for a while. Is that going to come back?
Well, yeah, I mean, China is very likely to come back, but, you know, it's difficult to go anywhere with a pandemic, Vietnam have built a racing circuit in the middle of Hanoi. We're not going to go there. But, you know, we've got to, first of all, get through the pandemic, and then we've got to get deals together to go to places. We were going to Malaysia for years. We could go back to Malaysia. We were going to Singapore for years. We should go back there. But until everything is nailed down and we have a vaccination philosophy that is global, not country by country, it's a complete nightmare. And that's going to take time to do. So, because, you know, we're not going to see the end of the pandemic for a while. And I think already it's fair to say that the 2022 calendar will be disrupted by the pandemic. I don't think Australia, the way Australia is at the moment, if they put it on the calendar, it's not going to happen.
But who will be driving in 2022? Wait, Joe, I'm going to do a snazzy bumper. Makes it seem all kind of news magazine show, Joe.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's a better segue without all that, but never mind. No. So, you want to know who's driving where? That's easy.
Wait, I've got questions.
Ask a question.
Let's do it with people's questions, because there's loads of drivers involved in transfer speculation. Where shall we start? If we just do the obvious one straight away, everyone will tune out. So, Alex Drilsma has asked us, with Alonso confirmed at Alpine and Perez confirmed at Red Bull, has Gasly got any other options rather than staying at AlphaTauri, and should he stay? So I heard one thing from Gasly, which was he said the comment was something like they want him to be the leader at AlphaTauri. So that looks like the carrot he's been dangled, which is, hey, look, this is your team. This is your baby. You're the number one driver. Is that his incentive?
Oh, it's his only choice.
Right. Okay, well, that's that.
He's under contract. He's under contract to Red Bull for another 2 years, and they'd be stupid to drop him. So basically, he's not moving anywhere, and he will be confirmed, and Tsunoda will be confirmed if he keeps on going well. The interesting thing is that, obviously, when that deal was done, Red Bull wanted to be nice to Honda and love them forever and ever and ever. So he was part of that. And if they've taken over the Honda project and Honda's involvement fades away and Yuki Tsunoda doesn't do the job, I can see him being booted out once the Honda influence begins to wane. However, he is quick and he is quite good at it. So we'll just have to see how he does. But right now, that team's staying the same.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Let's see, EJ has weighed in with a very Danishy question. Rumours about Albon and Hülkenberg rejoining the grid Alonso has renewed and only Kimi is leaving. How does the future look for the upcoming drivers? Ah, this is good. How does the future look for upcoming drivers in the junior formula? And is there any potential in them compared to the current roster in F1? Yeah, if people are just rolling back in and drivers seem to never be retiring, it does make it a bit despondent, doesn't it, for the juniors coming through?
It happens. It happens, but the good ones get a space. So what's going to happen to Hülkenberg's done, forget it.
You done?
Not going to see him. Albon, interesting question. Now, I got a little secret to tell you now. Scooping the world apart from the blog, of course.
But, of course. Last
week, Nicholas Latifi had an uncertain COVID test.
Right.
And for a few days, a day and a half, Williams needed to find an alternative driver. Who did they go to?
Hülkenberg.
Ding, 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 ding.
Alex Albon.
Incorrect. Alex Albon was the answer to that question.
That's so interesting.
Well, because he's the only driver on the market at the moment with immediate knowledge of a top team.
So
if you think about it, that's quite a logical thing to do. He's also got no reason to stay at Red Bull anymore because they've just confirmed Perez. So he's got no drive for next year, which is two seasons out of racing in Formula One, and two seasons out means you're finished. So that's why he turned up at Indianapolis last week, before all this happened, to go and see what was going on in IndyCar. But if there's a potential for a Formula One drive, Williams, I would see Albon going to Williams. Interestingly, Jost Capito, the boss of Williams, when asked on the subject, said, "We're not looking for experience or inexperience. We're looking for somebody who best fits what Williams needs." What somebody who fits what Williams needs has is a desire to stay there for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to have a good driver, decently young driver, a driver with decent experience in a top team who wants to stay there for a long time. Yes, Alex Albon. He fits all of those, doesn't he?
Yeah, make it yours.
Now, Nicholas Latifi is already signed there for next year, which they haven't announced yet, but that's definite.
Right.
Okay, he has a contract. They can't throw him out because Daddy's providing lots of money for the team.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I were them, and this is pure speculation, but there's one bloke out there that no one's talking about, which is bonkers. Everyone's talking about Teo Porcher, and everyone's talking about Guan Yu Zhou. No one's talking about Oscar Piastri, who is an Alpine junior driver with nowhere to go because Alonso and Ocon are there at least one more year. Now, if I was Williams, I would go to Piastri, who incidentally is overseen by a man called Mark Webber, who has something of a history at Williams. I might go there and say, "Listen, Oscar, we've got a deal for you. You've got a better record in the junior formula than almost everybody apart from Charles Leclerc and George Russell. Would you like to join us for 1 year of reserve driving, learning how it all works, and then join us full-time when Nicholas Latifi disappears in 2023? That's what I would do if I were them, and I wouldn't be astonished if they do something differently, but if they're a sensible racing team, that's what you're going to do.
So you'd have Albon in for 2022 and then Albon and Priastri for 23.
Yes.
That's if you're
I'd have those two drivers on long-term contracts, both of them. And the other thing to bear in mind is, you go ask George, what do you think of Alexander Albon as a driver? And George says, I'm off to Mercedes-Benz. I don't give a monkey's, but he's my best mate and I've known him forever. We used to share a house together in Milton Keynes. Therefore, I suggest you take him because he's jolly fast. And Red Bull wasted him.
Mm-hmm.
Twice, actually, Red Bull wasted him. So Alex Albon, I can see that the allegiance to Red Bull having been wasted twice by them is probably not so huge. And they can't offer him anything anyway.
Okay, hang on a minute, Joe. Big assumption here. You seem to have made a big assumption that there is that seat, George Russell's seat, available at Williams. So let's get to Mark Greenough's question.
No, there's no assumption.
Hang on. Let me ask the question. A question from listener Mark Greenough says, Bottas got a new car from Mercedes. Is that a parting gift or a signing on bonus? So Mercedes have done that big Twitter thing. They've given Bottas this beautifully liveried Mercedes car. And there was a picture on Bottas on his Instagram of him with a notepad and pen as if he was about to or had just signed something. So what's going on then? Is it a dead cert, Russell to Mercedes?
It's been a dead cert for about 3 months. it is, look, Sergio Perez signing for Red Bull tells you something, okay? What is that something it tells you? It tells you that Red Bull can't get George Russell.
Okay.
Okay?
Yep.
Now, prior to that, George Russell didn't have a contract for next year outside Williams, but he did have a Mercedes contract. Now, George Russell sitting around for a year waiting to replace Valtteri Bottas is not going to happen. So the only choice was, if he comes out of his Williams deal, he'd do another deal somewhere else. And going to Red Bull would be a way for George to get into the big league. And they'd take him in a heartbeat. They would take him. So signing Perez means no room for George. No room for George means that they know that George is doing something else. And if George is doing something else, there's only one thing George is doing. So we know he's going to Mercedes. And Valtteri Bottas is off to Alfa Romeo because it's an Alfa Romeo. It's a car company. It's a fig leaf. Going back to Williams would be returning to his roots. Doesn't make any sense.
Okay. Well, you seem very sure, Joe.
I am very sure.
So why the delay? Why the delay on announcing it?
Ask Toto Wolff. Who knows?
Was it there is a
logical conclusion, which is that if you tell a driver he's not driving for that team again in the future, he might just say, "Ah, to hell with it. I can't be bothered to put my life on the line every time I go out there." Mm-hmm. And they want to win the Constructors' Championship. Now, I'm not saying that Valtteri's like that, but I can see that being an argument. I just think that you have to have a future for George Russell at Mercedes. You have to have a future for somebody to be trained up and ready to go. They don't want to have another Valtteri Bottas scenario whereby Lewis decides at a moment's notice, "I'm quitting," and there's nobody ready to take over. You know, sorry, not Lewis, Nico.
Nico, yeah.
Nico decided at a moment's notice, "I don't want to do this anymore. Therefore, let's bring in Bottas, but he needs time to get up to speed." That's not how to do it.
Okay.
One day, Lewis Hamilton's going to say, "Oh, I can't be bothered to wear this horrible clothing that people are paying me to wear anymore. I want to stop. I want to give up. I've won enough championships. I've done this. I've done that. I want to stop." And Mercedes needs somebody ready for that.
So but they're not going to put George in a worse car. That's not the Mercedes way.
No.
They're going to be free to race. They're going to have potentially another Rosberg Hamilton scenario on that. Do they really want that? Is that worth that? Surely just wait for Lewis to retire. There's going to be Ocon waiting in the wings. There'll be Norris.
No. Look at the championship points in the Constructors' Championships in the years when Rosberg was there and when Bottas was there. Rosberg-Hamilton was a better combination than Hamilton-Bottas.
There was a difference in the car superiority, though, wasn't there? When Bottas came in, the Ferraris were giving much more of a challenge.
No, it doesn't matter. The point is that you want a second driver who will produce the maximum because you're up against Red Bull who are, you know, really, they've got two good drivers and pushing. I mean, Red Bull has a habit of not having two good drivers at the same time. But, you know, with Perez and Verstappen, that's a decent Constructors' Championship challenge. Ferrari got a great lineup, but not the car to do the job. Alpine have got a great lineup, but not a car to do the job. You know, so basically you have to have the best possible combination of drivers, and the best possible combination of drivers, young and old, is Hamilton and Russell.
Okay.
The only thing Mercedes does lack is what happens when Lewis wakes up one day and says, "I want to quit." They need to have somebody ready to go into that place too. And that is more difficult.
Okay. And what do you think about Hamilton potentially quitting? Because he's got 2 years left on his contract. That doesn't mean he can't pick up and walk away at some point. He'll just be in breach of his contract and give money back. But what does it sound like he wants to do? Does he want to go for 10 titles?
I think he's happy racing cars and doing his thing. And he wants to go for as many titles. He always says he doesn't care about contracts and he'll quit when he doesn't feel like it anymore. But he still loves what he's doing. He still wants to beat the records. He still wants to remember also that when you stop being a Formula One driver, your ability to have a platform on which you can spout forth on other subjects disappears as well. So, you know, he wants to be able to do his social stuff, world changes. But if he's not in Formula One, he won't have that platform anymore. So, I mean, I don't imagine that would be dominant thought in his driving career, but there's certainly an element of that as well. So I think he'll go on until the end of his contract and we'll see, you know, if he's still loving it. Look at Alonso.
So just for the record, just for anyone who's listening, I think it's the wrong shout. And what I think is that people are setting the wrong standard for Bottas. as an he is an out and out number two driver, and we're just not used to seeing that at Mercedes. And he was doing the job. And until they start losing constructors' championships, which they haven't been, it ain't broke. I don't see what they're fixing. I just don't see it.
They're fixing the future. Mm. Because Valtteri Bottas is not Lewis Hamilton. George Russell, maybe. You know, that's what they're doing. They're getting ready for the future. And Bottas, who has done nothing wrong, apart from a few mistakes, but he's fundamentally done nothing wrong. He just hasn't done quite enough right.
Yeah, sorry, he hasn't done anything wrong very soon after Hungary.
Everybody makes mistakes. Yeah. Okay, Lewis Hamilton, you know, remember too also, you know, history might be different in Red Bull if Lewis Hamilton hadn't rather hack-handedly crashed into Albon in Austria last year. Albon would have won that race probably. And then would Sergio Perez have got that drive? Probably not. You know, it's just the way it is. People make mistakes occasionally. And we just have to handle that and live with it. But I don't think Valtteri's done anything wrong. And I think he's a formidable racing driver. And he's the greatest thing about Valtteri is every time you punch him and he falls down, he gets up and gets punched again. And he's happy to keep doing that, which is, for me, really his remarkable strength is his resilience to being beaten all the time by Lewis. That is spectacularly impressive stuff. He's a solid, solid individual. And he's a number one in every team in the paddock apart from Mercedes. So if he goes down to Alpha, do we think he's going to get beaten by Antonio Giovinazzi?
Probably not. Okay.
No, because Kimi Raikkonen is well into his retirement already. Although, you know, a lot of people who like Kimi because they think he's funny think that he's still fast, but basically he's not. So it's time for him to go. And he probably knows it's time for him to go too. It's not like he needs the cash. And Valtteri will be a very good choice for what is supposed to be a manufacturer team. So, you know, it all makes sense to me.
All right. Well, let's move on to the next question after another beloved bumper that you love so much. That's proper funky. How can you not like that, Joe? You've got no soul.
It looked like the Spa crash in 1998 with all his wheels flying by.
It did. You've hit the nail on the head. All right. Mike Stoner, will Ricciardo have a seat next year? Daniel Ricciardo.
Next year? Sure. He's got a contract.
Oh, he has. Okay.
And to be honest, he did very well at Spa. In qualifying and in the race, actually, come to think of it, because it was the same. But
did he do well at qualifying? I mean, Norris showed he was fifth,
wasn't he?
Yeah, but Norris showed that was a pole position car.
Yes, he did. But Daniel is not perhaps. I think Daniel's been taken a little bit surprised by how fast Lando is, and I think also you've got to bear in mind that Lando has got his feet under the table there. He knows everything. He knows everyone, etc. And Daniel's still learning. But Daniel needs to up the game. And he has been recently. I think it's fair to say he has been upping the game. And I think he will get there in the end. It's just a matter of how long it takes him to do. But Lando is a very, very good package, as we say in Formula One. And we shouldn't pretend otherwise.
Yeah. And next year, of course, is that big regulations reset. That was what Perez was being very optimistic about, saying, well, you know, who knows what happens next year? Maybe that suits me, you know, because he's got a very different driving style. Perhaps Ricciardo as well. Whatever happens next year suddenly means he can overtake people into turn one more better than anyone else. Like, it is a real, hopefully a real shake up and reset. And then I think we'll see a bit of a fairer comparison, won't we?
No, I also think one should bear in mind that Daniel's always had a bit of a weakness in qualifying, but he's a fantastic racer. He will make things happen when they can't happen. And yet there he goes, whoomph, he's done it. There's a guy in Formula 3 at the moment called Dennis Hauger from Norway who is running away with the championship. Had a terrible weekend at Spa, but not through his own problem. But he's pulling off the kind of things that people like in Formula 1, which is overtaking maneuvers that are at the same time beautiful and improbable. And he's got this kind of level of talent. And I'm sure that in the fullness of time, Dennis Hauger will have a Norwegian fever going in Formula One before too long, I think.
Oh, interesting, Joe. All right. The Germans. Let's go German. You've dismissed Hulk. You've said we're never seeing him again. We've got a question from Paul Adams about Sebastian Vettel. What motorsport role does Joe think Sebastian Vettel would be best suited to after he retires as a driver? I described him on Sunday as, he's just everyone's F1 dad now. Did you know he was actually sweeping water off with a broom as well? He was at Lacombe. They didn't show it, but he was at Lacombe with a brush. But he's so vocal. And just seeing him being so concerned, like during qualifying, and then going and stopping at Norris's car as well. It's a little bit un-racing drivery in an odd way, isn't it? It's
a sign of age.
Yeah.
It's a sign of age in racing drivers when they start to worry about other people more than themselves. And in a way, I like that because it's a sign of maturity as well. But at the same time, I don't necessarily like that because it means that perhaps he's not as fast as he used to be. Yeah. But he is still very fast. I mean, don't knock him. I mean, trying to get it all together in the first few races of the year was tough. And at Ferrari, he was in all kinds of trouble against Charles Leclerc. And Sebastian has made lots of mistakes. And this is his one weakness in the arguments that for him staying in the long term. Is that when he's under pressure from other people, he has been making so many mistakes. And you can't afford to do that in his position. Now, he's fortunate in as much as Aston Martin were looking for a famous name to go in there, and he fitted the bill there. But he's not shaming Lance Stroll, which perhaps he should be. Generally speaking, when a team is run by somebody and their son is the driver, they're not necessarily the fastest driver in the world. That's the nicest way I can say of putting it. Yeah. I mean, the only thing in that particular case is to make the team better than everything else, and then perhaps son might win more. But he's not slow, but he's not the full package. And I think that's you know, we'll see how he develops. But I think there's a level of stress going on inside that team, to be quite honest.
Really?
Well, yes, because I think that the racers in the team recognize the fact that if you want to get to the front, you've got to have the absolute best drivers available, where the owner perhaps doesn't feel the same way. And I think that level of stress will ultimately blow up, because these things tend to blow up when you have internal stress going on.
Okay. Talk to me about Lance Stroll a second. And yes, Dave Hart, we will finish talking about Ferrari, don't worry. Talk to me about Lance Stroll then, because there were times when I've seen interviews and it just seems like he didn't care. And this was going back a year or two now. This season, though, when he's on the radio, he does seem a bit more passionate. He does seem a bit more into it. What's the chances that, you know, he doesn't have to work for a living, doesn't he? What's the chances he just goes, nah, I'm done now?
No, I don't know. I don't know. The thing about Lance is that... He's grown up in a family with billions, and that has an effect. Even if it's a subconscious effect, it still has an effect on the way you look at the world. He doesn't have to worry about anything. You know, if he doesn't do particularly well, he doesn't really have to worry about it, because his dad's not going to kick him out.
There's that.
You know, so that means a level of passion required is perhaps not the same. Now, that doesn't mean he's not passionate about it to a large extent, but there are questions. More for me is the question of whether he has all the skills necessary. He's got some of them, certainly. There's no question. He can drive a fast lap. He's good in the wet. He's good on tires. There's lots of things that
he
does that are very good. But then again, under pressure, it's not quite the same. We saw in Turkey last year where he was leading the race on pole position. He just went completely to pieces. And for no obvious reason. And there are occasions when this happens, when you think, nah, he's not the full package. Mm. And that's what is his weak point. Now, if he can make it better and convince the I'm just a reflection of the hard thinkers in Formula One.
Yeah,
I think the same way, because I've been around them long enough. I know how they think. And they all say he's not good enough because he's not full package. Boom, done. There's no wishy-washy, he might be, da-da-da. I'm being nice in a way, because I'm saying, well, let's see if he can do it. But in the thinking of Formula One people, which is basically a hand down from Bernie Ecclestone, it's yes or no, black or white. There's no gray here. You know, it's as simple as that. So that's how I feel about it. And I think lots of people feel the same way. But obviously, everyone goes blah, blah, blah for the cameras.
I'll just head off some emails. You can always email us, by the way, feedback@missedapex.net. Always happy to pass emails on to Joe as well. That people will say that he had some wing damage in that turkey race when he was on pole, but then they never showed it. They just went, he's got wing damage. Okay, can you show us it? We're busy. And they carried on. But just pointing out that, yes, that was the claim from that Grand Prix, and that's why he fell back down the grid. Okay, Dave Hart is asking very nicely if we can talk about Ferrari for a second. I know you need to get away in 7 minutes, Joe. Sure, there's not 7 minutes of Ferrari stuff to talk about, is there?
No, not really.
When Ferrari improves its power unit, mm-hmm. That's interesting because Dave says when and not if, and the new regs come in next year. Is it safe to say they will have possibly the strongest driver pairing on the grid? I don't think that's a bad shout. Leclerc and Sainz seem to be both driving very well in a substandard car. I think the driver question is pretty cut and dry. Like, they've got a very, very good driver lineup. Mm-hmm. But the when with the power unit is what threw me about Dave's question there.
Well, yeah.
Isn't it an if?
The bottom line is that the Ferrari power unit's still not up to it. And next year, everyone's going to have a new engine again. So we'll have to see who comes out on top. It doesn't mean Ferrari will, because Alpine will have a new engine next year. Mercedes will have effectively a new engine next year. Red Bull will have effectively a new engine as well. So we don't know until it happens who's going to have the best one. So do they have the best lineup? That's a very good lineup, sure, but so is Alpine. So is a number of other teams up and down the grid. They've got good lineups, but a good lineup is not worth anything if you don't have a good car. And a good car needs a good engine. So you have to have, and it's always been the way in Formula One, you've got to have all elements at the same time to have the best team, because you're up against the best people. So that's, you know, we'll see. And that's all you can say. You just have to say, we'll see. And we'll start making noises about it in about race three next year. We'll be able to tell you.
So if next season is indeed the incorrect decision to have Lewis Hamilton and George Russell, that is definitely a contender for strongest driver lineup, surely.
Yes, I think there's no question about that.
All right. Okay, good. Well, look, I know you're going to go and tour the sights and sounds of Spa-Francorchamps. Did you get your car out okay? Was it a bit of a mud bath?
One of the things I need to do this evening is go to a car wash, because it is spattered. In a way that it was spattered in mud in a way that it would be in blood if there was a Texas Chainsaw Massacre going on. You know, it's a real mess. So it needs to be tidied up before I present myself to the paddock in Spa. Where am I going? Zandvoort. That's the one.
You'd best go to Zandvoort, Joe. And do you want to pick out a winner? Oh, here's the thing. Here's the thing I meant to say is that actually that result, although it looks like Verstappen got a 5-point lead and benefited, he had two nightmare races. Not necessarily of his own making at Silverstone and Hungaroring. What he really needed was like a solid weekend out of the front to kind of settle that and get himself back in the zone. Like, he might be sitting there now thinking, actually, I lost the chance to make a 10-point gap
Yes, he did. Absolutely.
Yeah, Jeremy, or a 7-point gap. So psychologically, that wasn't a great weekend for Max either.
It wasn't a great weekend for Formula One. The only people who truly benefited from it, truly benefited from it financially and in every other respect, is Williams, because they picked up so many points that there's no way on God's earth that Alfa Romeo are going to catch them now. So Alfa is doomed to ninth place, and it could be 10th place, because if you have another freak race and Haas has a good one, you know, that's a danger, always a danger. So you've got to be turning in, you know, even if you only get points from qualifying, Alfa's got to do something about it.
Yeah, it's going to be very tough.
And they've spent tons and tons of money trying to improve the team, and they've gone backwards. So that's not great. So they have to identify why it's not great and fix it.
Find out what Joe thinks very soon after every race by subscribing to GP Plus magazine. And someone in our chat room here pointed out that your magazine was out before the podium this week. So That's a little feather in your cap, isn't it?
That's not true.
Is it not true? Oh, not quite. Okay. GP Plus magazine out very soon after the race. Also, the best blog in F1, the Green Notebook, Joe. And that's still going. That's still up and running.
There's just one gone up about a few hours ago.
So search Joe Saywood Green Notebook, and I think you'll find that. So what I'm going to do...
It will turn up, yes.
And follow Joe at Joe Saywood on Twitter as well. Joe, I'm going to play one of my fancy bumpers, and I'm going to hang up on you unceremoniously so you can go off and see the sights and sounds of Belgium. Thank you very much for your time, and have a wonderful Tuesday.
Thank you.
And as Joe disappears to go and eat some frites, I just want to tell you what is coming up here for the next couple of weeks. So we have, obviously, race reviews. I think we'll continue doing those. People like those, don't they? Okay, good. In that case, 8 p.m. UK time. Come and join us live. The chat is currently still at the moment only in our live patron Slack group. We are having a revisit and a rethink of that, but we did need a pause on the phenomenon of 10 to maybe 12,000 people at the Monaco Grand Prix just flooding in there and having instant access to be able to influence our moods and what's going on in the moment. Like I said, you can still call me a turnip on YouTube. You've just got to wait till the final video is out and edited. And you can leave your comment there. And I've been having a fine discussion with a few folks. And I don't mind negative feedback at all and been speaking to people there. It was just the in-the-moment one. But we'll revisit that. Maybe I can have a... Can I have an intern? Can I have an intern? Yeah, maybe I should train the lad up there to sit and filter and delete the mean ones calling me a turnip in real time. But also, between the shows, we've been working harder on kind of midweek content as well. You've noticed on the non-race Sundays, we've been trying to have a bit of a variety. So we'll have a tech segment, we'll have a news segment, and we'll sort of mash them up into a nice pre-recorded magazine-style show. I've really liked those. But in between the races on a Tuesday, I've been trying to do something different. So today we've got Joe, we had Matthew Carter jumping in for a Tuesday in the last triple header. And next week, the one I'm going for is interesting. It won't be out till the Wednesday, but we've got our lawyer, Peter Wright from Digital Law UK, who's going to talk us through some of the contract stuff. You know, is a contract watertight? Joe says Ricardo, for example, has a contract for next season. Can you sack a driver? So we'll be looking into some stuff like that. And we're going to have Jeff jump back on as well with some of his great teammate battles. So me and him are going to have a bit of a chat about the Multi 21 era. So that should be a lot of fun as well. So we're just trying to, you know, add some variety, try different things, different formats. And so far, I've been really, really enjoying it. Final word from me. I want to expand my podcast horizons. So if you have a podcast and you think I would make a decent guest or panelist, I would love to jump on board. I am a generalist. I have views on politics and pop culture, and I can take a punt at the odd scientific thing as well. Then DM me on Twitter or email me spanners@mistapex.net, and I think I would enjoy jumping on some podcasts. I reserve the right to politely decline. I'd like it if you were using microphones and not just shouting into a tin cup on a string. That would be good if it was a decent show, but I'm not worried about numbers or anything like that. And we'll give you a little bit of a plug after my appearance. Bit of a plug on Mr. Apex Podcast 2. All right. I think that'll do. When am I going to see you next? 8 p.m. next Sunday. Until then, work hard, be kind, and have fun. This was Inside F1 with Joe and me, Spanners. Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.